counsel's back in his seat. I'll ask him to call the next case for court consideration.
Calling 824-0473, Extenet Systems versus Sherman Associates.
And good morning. The panel has already been identified. The case has now been called. Each of you is familiar with appellate procedure. 15 minutes each, an additional 5 minutes rebuttal to appellate counsel. Please state your name and indicate what party you're speaking on behalf of.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Patrick B. Steinhoff. I'm here for appellant Sherman Associates Incorporated. This is an appeal from a judgment that was entered on cross motions for summary judgment on stipulated facts, also an appeal from an award of prejudgment interest. Facts are pretty...
And just to be clear, you agree that it was ripe for summary judgment because of the stipulated facts. You're not asking to have that undone in any way, shape, or form?
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no fact disputes. It's just a question of application of the law and whether this is eligible for prejudgment interest and whether the request was properly made. But there's no fact disputes. Okay. So facts are pretty simple. Sherman is developing a block of downtown Minneapolis. The intersection is Portland and Washington. There's various components of the project. One part of it is building a new fire station for the city of Minneapolis. There's other components that involve apartments, condos, office, retail, stuff like that. Extenet, the respondent, is a telecommunications company. It puts equipment on city light posts pursuant to an ordinance scheme that the city has, also pursuant to an agreement, a co-location agreement with the city, and also pursuant to a licensing scheme on a light post by light post basis. The city also has a policy that if a parcel of property develops, it's going to replace the light posts abutting that property if the property is downtown. And the purpose for that, stated by the city policy, which is approved by the city council, is to create uniformity of the light posts. So they're replacing all the light posts downtown with nicer light posts. And they.
So all of that said,
yep.
The biggest hurdle you have is the fact that Sherman is a private real estate developer. I mean, as a private real estate developer, the city is not, public benefits are not necessarily being inured as a result of you taking on this major renovation or redevelopment or whatever you want to call it. So why should Extenet be responsible for bearing the costs in this matter? They didn't do anything. In fact, the equipment, the nodules, were removed without even their awareness.
I think they're called nodes, Your Honor.
Nodes, not nodules.
I don't speak telecommunications either. So I think the answer is because there's a city ordinance scheme, and the city ordinance requires it in this situation. And I'll just...
But what's the public benefit? How can you show me as a private developer what the public benefit is in having these nodes, the sites, changed?
So, Your Honor, I think you're looking at it the wrong way, and if I may, I'll just read through the ordinance that applies. And the correct ordinance is 429.110, and I apologize. There's a couple places in my brief that I cited to. There's a different ordinance with identical language. And my citation at some points was to that ordinance. But the correct ordinance, the language is in the brief and in the district court's order. It's 429.110, and it reads, a right-of-way user shall promptly, at its own expense, with regard for seasonal working conditions, permanently remove and relocate its facilities in the right-of-way when it is necessary to prevent interference and not merely for the convenience of the city in connection with a present or future city use of the right-of-way for a public project.
So I'm looking at your ordinance, I'm with you there.
Okay.
But the ordinance, from my reading of it, only lists the circumstances in which the right-of-way user is obligated to pay the relocation costs. That's the way, that's how I see it. Where does it place the burden of paying the relocation costs on a specific entity? Is that in there somewhere, and I didn't see it? Point that out to me.
So it doesn't, so it doesn't specify if the if the project is a city project that is triggered by a development by a private party, which I think is what Extenet is saying. It doesn't specify that anybody has to pay for it. The only places in the ordinance where it specifies who has the obligation to pay
when the city vacates the right-of-way.
Is when the city vacates the right-of-way.
You agree with that?
Yep. If the city were vacating a right-of-way, what the ordinance says is that they can keep their equipment there unless the abutting owner pays for its relocation.
Here, the city didn't vacate the right-of-way, did they?
City did not vacate the right-of-way. It switched out its light posts using its workers through the Public Works Department. That, I think, is a city use of the right-of-way.
Was it part of the agreement that that your client paid for that removal? So wasn't it the city
workers
did it, but it was paid for by you?
So there was an agreement between Sherman and the city of Minneapolis, and it said that Sherman agreed to pay for relocation of utilities that are on the property. And the district court and Extenet say that through a third-party beneficiary theory, that means that Extenet can enforce that provision.
But they disclaimed that, the third-party beneficiary point. It was more just to show, maybe as a factual basis to the private, that it was a private project or that it supported their co-location, that the co-location agreement didn't.
Your Honor, that provision doesn't apply. These are light posts. They're in the right-of-way. They're in the street right-of-way. And, you know, if this had been teed up in the pleadings, I would have included in the stipulation of facts a copy of the plat that showed where the lot boundaries are.
I guess my question is less about whether it's on the, like, I'm not interested in whether this is part of the agreement per se is, and the claim is based on that, but when we're looking at whether this is a public or a private project for purposes of interpreting the ordinance or looking at the common law, why is that fact relevant to that question about the fact that who actually paid for it, that you had city workers do it? Presumably, I guess another question I have is, like, Could a private party have taken the light post down, or does the city have to do it? But so I'm wondering, like, just the fact that it was city workers, I just don't know that it helps answer the private public question.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, there's city light posts within the city right of way replaced by city workers pursuant to a city policy in connection with construction of a city fire station. I think it's indisputably a public project, at least as it relates to the fire station. I think Judge Work.
Project then.
Your Honor, it's not in the record, and it's mind-numbingly complicated. There was a land swap, and the city charged back the cost of a bunch of stuff, including the light post, to Sherman, but the city was paying Sherman to build the fire station, so there was a reconciliation of.
They have had to get competitive bids to build that fire station, though?
I don't know, Your Honor. I wasn't involved in the.
It's kind of an outside question, but how do we know what a public project is? MCO doesn't define what public project is, and now you've alluded to the fire station, so enlighten me on what you think a public project is.
Well, it's unhelpful that there's no definition of that term in the ordinance. I think this ordinance in general is not great in terms of telling people what they're supposed to do. But city light posts, city right-of-way, city building that the city owns right now, the fact that it contracted with a private party to build the fire station, I don't think that makes it private. Even if, I mean, I think the nub of Extenet's argument here is the fact that the relocation was triggered by something a private party did. Does that mean the private party is responsible? And it says under the common law, yes. And I say, who cares about the common law? We have this ordinance that's comprehensive. It specifies circumstances in which people like my client.
Is there any way this could have been avoided? I mean, and this, again, has nothing to do with the outcome of your case, but when you were working with the city of Minneapolis as far as doing this, could this have been avoided by having something explicitly addressing the relocation cost of the nodes, the sites, or not? I'm just wondering how that played out.
I think it could have been. I think the city of Minneapolis is, it's irresponsible for it to have these competing policies and not specify who has to pay for what. I mean, the city of Minneapolis is passive and standoffish, and it shouldn't be. I mean, this is municipal mismanagement, I think. But, I mean, the ordinance says what it says, and we have to figure out what it means.
So if we just, you know, don't agree with you on the read of the ordinance, or that it clearly says, you know, that Extenet is responsible for paying. What's your view on the common law? Like, do you lose at that point? Are you conceding the common law point, or what's the?
Your Honor, I mean, the common law, I mean, it hasn't been adopted in Minnesota. I think if the facts in those other cases were to come before you, there's no reason to think that you wouldn't adopt the rules that are in those cases. I think those rules are based on unjust enrichment. I don't think there's anything.
What did Sherman receive a value as far as unjust enrichment? I frankly find that to be a weak part of your argument.
Your Honor, the way I look at it is why does Sherman have to pay twice as much for a light post because somebody else, some private company who's making money off that light post, decided to put its equipment on this light post and not across the street? Why is it just for my client to, you know, pay $140,000 extra when, you know, it put its equipment here and the ordinance says it's supposed to bear the risk of that? I think it's, who should bear the risk that the city is going to require a replacement of light posts? And I don't think it's unjust to make the telecommunications company, who is making money off use of public facilities, to bear the risk of that. Your Honor, could I speak to the...
The counsel, it sounds like your client had a pretty sweetheart deal here.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, it made a deal based on what it knew the costs were, which were provided by the city, and the city told it what the light post costs. They didn't include the cost of relocating.
What's the total value of the development of that block?
I don't have any idea, Your Honor.
For your company?
I don't know.
That'd be hundreds of millions of dollars, I would think.
Your Honor, I don't know if they're making money off this project or not, so I can't answer that. It's not in the record. I'd like to talk about the prejudgment interest for a minute and a half, if I could. So I think you have to make a motion if you want prejudgment interest. Typically, it's done post-judgment because it doesn't make any sense to talk about prejudgment interest until there's a judgment. I don't think there's any reason why you can't do it pursuant to Rule 56, but if you do, you have to follow Rule 56. You have to make a motion. You have to make a showing that you're entitled to prejudgment interest. You have to make citations to the record. The court has to explain its decision on the record or in the order. None of that happened. There was no motion. The request was made by proposed order. There was no argument, no citation to the record. So it wasn't properly before the court. If it was properly before the court, the loss hadn't happened yet. So the judgment is for reimbursement of future damages. Now, the case that the court wants to read is Elk Creek Courthouse Association Incorporated, which, as many of these cases are, is an insurance coverage case. And the important part in that case is that is when did the loss happen? And in that case, it happened years before the payment obligation arose, and the court, this court, decided that because the damage happened in 2020, that's when the prejudgment interest obligation arises, even though the payment obligation didn't happen until years later. I mean, here, at the time of the argument, the light posts hadn't been replaced yet, so there wasn't any relocation, there wasn't any loss, so the loss hadn't happened yet, so the court shouldn't have awarded prejudgment interest going back to 2021, even if Extenet had actually made a motion, which they didn't.
You'll have your rebuttal time, Mr. Steinhoff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Corey Olson, and I am here on behalf of the respondent, Extenet Systems,
what
LLC.
What is a node?
I
know we're talking about the site 122 and 131, but why is it called a node?
I've seen it referred to several different ways, node, SWF, so a small wireless facility. It's essentially I think you can see them on streetlights every now and then, or if you look on Google Street View, it probably stands about high as this podium, and it is just a broadcast node, and they put them around the city and essentially make like a mesh network that then broadcast cell phone signals.
So when the city of Minneapolis took down the nodes from the sites that are at issue here, they didn't inform your client that they did that.
Correct.
So what happened to them? I mean, what happens?
To the physical antennas? The physical antennas were, one was removed right away. The other one was turned off and I think removed a short time afterward. Those were placed into a storage area.
Really, I'm asking for a reason because it seems to me then when you had to replace the nodes that, are they not reusable?
The nodes themselves are, my understanding is, they're reusable. I think there might be some, they may have to switch to a different antenna for some of them, depending on the height it is from the street. We're not seeking reimbursement for the nodes
but
themselves.
I just wanted to be clear on that. So the amount that you're seeking reimbursement is the installation, that part of it, the hardwiring or whatever it is.
Correct. And this was, My wife's a structural engineer, and she tells me that this is totally normal, and this is one of these things that, as a lawyer, surprises me. It is incredibly expensive to engineer poles, light poles, flag poles even, because there's so much force that goes into them because of the wind, and you put weight at the top, and it adds to the force. So under the collocation agreement and under Minneapolis's requirements to install these nodes, you have to get a report completed by a structural engineer that says that these poles can hold the excess forces that occur with it. There are some studies that go into it. You have to reline the fiber optic cables that run to it. You have to make sure that the utilities can handle it. It's actually an involved process. Plus, you need to have we have to have consultants come in and say that yes, you can place your nodes in this location so that it works with the mesh. So it's actually a little bit more involved. And so what happened in this case was when our client learned that these nodes, one had been taken down, one had been turned off, and would be soon removed, it triggers something in their system to say, okay, hey, there's a fault in the network. And so that's how they actually learned about this. And then proceeded to try to figure out, okay, why was it removed? Who removed it, what is going on, and that's when they started investigating, and it wasn't until October of that year that it figured out that they were removed in connection with this project that was being undertaken by Sherman, and that's when it made the demand.
Can I ask you quickly about, just sticking to prejudgment interest just for a minute since we just came off of that, and while we're talking about kind of what happened here, the damage, you're not seeking any type of other damages. I understood that you're not seeking like lost profits for the time in between, you know, when this lawsuit started to when you may be able to put them. Like, is the cost just the actual cost of replace or of moving them to the new site And why is that different? Like, what about that is different from the time this litigation was filed such that prejudgment interest is appropriate? Because I could see it if you're saying, well, we have lost profits, or we had other, or the cost is going up, so it's actually, it might be more than that because a year or two has gone by, and sort of, you know, I'm just trying to understand why prejudgment interest is appropriate if, like, the replacement cost is something that's going to happen in the future, and presumably you'll know at that point what it costs.
Yes. We are not seeking the lost profit. Certainly there was a loss to my client because they get paid for broadcasting from this network. So if they can't broadcast from that network, the loss of the nodes is a loss of revenue. But the way we looked at it is that's really in some ways double dipping if you say we want the cost of relocation plus the loss profit, because the response that I would have from the other side is, well, if you were losing profit and you knew you were going to have to replace it, why didn't you just go ahead and replace it? So it was in some ways double dipping, and we said, no, we should be we're entitled to have the cost of these items relocated. And we made that demand on Sherman in October of 2021.
On that question, prejudgment interest, the court established an October 12 date as far as prejudgment interest. Your notice did go out on October 5. You're not raising that as an issue?
No, it was, I think it was when, and I have to look, it was addressed in the stipulation of facts of when a notice had gone. And so I think we based the proposed order based on when that notice was given. And
non-issue then for this court?
It's non-issue. In terms of, the issue is, obviously Sherman challenges whether prejudgment interest should be awarded, but in terms of the date, that is not an issue. I think the district court ruled on that correctly. So then in terms of why the loss was there, so there was a loss to my client right from the start because they lost the ability to broadcast. So that's when you look at the cases that talk about future damages, they talk about things that haven't happened but more than likely will. And so we're going to award you damages because we expect that would happen. For example, in the case that you just heard, we expect that there's going to be a fight over this driveway line, right? That would be something that would be a future damage, okay? We think that it's going to happen. We have a pretty good sense of it. This is something that did happen. These were removed. These have a cost. And the purpose of the prejudgment interest statute is to encourage the parties to reach resolution. So if Sherman was concerned about prejudgment interest and didn't want to have that, when my client reached out to them, they should have said, well, we realize this is our obligation. We will work to reimburse you. Had they done so, all of this could have been avoided. Instead, they disclaimed responsibility, try to force our client to get reimbursed from the city, which obviously was not going to happen, and the city's going to say we have no responsibility for that. And so as a result, we were forced into the litigation and now need to get paid in order to pay for this relocation. I will touch on a couple points that were the court had some questions about. The first was the argument about the ordinance 429.110. And if you look at that ordinance, it actually addresses three situations in which the utility must bear the costs. And none of those three apply here. So first is the present or future use with a public project. This is not a public project. Was there a fire station built? Yes, there was. But it sat next to a $125 million major renovation or major redevelopment of the Allied block. And when you look at when this argument has come up in other cases, the courts say a private, or you look at what is the motivating factor for this to get done. The city of Minneapolis wasn't looking to build a new fire station. Sherman was looking to redevelop the block. It wanted to put a tower where the existing fire station was. So it went to the city and said, we'll work a deal with you. You give us the block, we'll tear down the existing fire station, we'll build you a new fire station as a part of the exchange that's going to happen here. That's the point of the redevelopment contract. It shows
what was the cost of the new fire station?
I think it was about $6 or $7 million. It's in there's like an amount that gets allocated to it in the redevelopment contract, but it was a small percentage.
Was it because of all this horse trading that they could avoid competitive bids?
That's my understanding. That's how I would assume that was the case, because certainly there had been talk of redeveloping the Allied block, and if you know that part of Minneapolis, that was sort of the next logical spot to go. It had been surface parking lots for a number of years. And so it is nice real estate to build there. And so the fire station was, I think it was built in possibly the late 1800s. So, I mean, but the city of Minneapolis was using it, and it just said, okay, as a condition of you receiving this property to undertake this project, you have to build us a new fire station. So in that sense, it's no different than any of the other exactions that we see in these other cases. And so if you look at the cases that have addressed these situations, each time the developer comes in and says, well, there's this great public benefit to it. That's, you know, they always say, oh, look at how beneficial this is to the public work, widening this road or putting in new and updated utilities. And what you see here is that argument is made, but the city wasn't looking to build a new fire station. This was the motivating factor that happened here is that Sherman wanted to build this new residential tower of high-end luxury apartments. And that's what it got to do. And it just, the condition was that it had to build the new fire station. The second is health, public health or safety, that obviously isn't implicated by this project. And the third is safety and convenience of travel, which isn't an issue in here. The other thing, other part about that statute. Go ahead.
My question, which I posed to the other party, which was kind of the relationship with the common law and the ordinance here, is your, I was kind of reading maybe two different ways, or look, there are two different ways to read your brief, and I'm curious which one or if you adopt both. One is that, you know, the common law establishes that the private party has to pay and the ordinance does not somehow supersede the common law. There's nothing in the ordinance that supersedes. And the other way to look at it is the ordinance actually requires the private developer to pay here without the common law. And I'm wondering which one of those or both is,
I think, your argument. The statute is silent on it. It doesn't address this specific situation, which is why we disagree with Sherman's position that the ordinance supersedes the common law, simply because the specific facts of this case don't fall within the ordinance. And if it doesn't fall within, then clearly you don't have something that's as comprehensive as it portrays it. And if it's not comprehensive, then it doesn't usurp the common law. But I think even if you were to say, let's imagine that we didn't have a common law to go off and we only had the statute. I think the way that you read the statute through the negative implication canon, which Sherman brings up, but applies in the wrong way, you would look at 429.110 and you'd say, okay, there are three circumstances where the utility must bear the costs. It's, you know, the public project, the health or safety, and safety and convenience of travel. None of those apply. And if those are the ones where we specify that the utility should pay, then by implication, then in all the other situations, the developer should apply or should pay for that. So I think that you can get there by reading the statute as well. I just don't think that it really addresses it. And when you have the common law where that law is well-developed and it says this is how we address these situations, and I understand no Minnesota court has addressed that yet.
Do you think a precedential opinion is appropriate for this?
I do, because there is not a lot of case law on this.
I'll put you on the spot, but what would you suggest as a proposed syllabus point? As a syllabus point, what are you envisioning if you think this is precedential in nature?
Well, I think that you would look and you'd specify that the legal issue that we raise right now in the opening of our brief, when a real estate developer engaging in a for-profit development necessitates the relocation of a third-party utility located in the right-of-way, who must bear those costs?
Okay.
And the private developer must bear those costs. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I think I've raised all the points, and I'll cede the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Steinhoff, you have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just one or two points.
I need to reset the timer.
Oh.
Thanks. All right, go ahead.
Okay, it's going. On the prejudgment interest issue, I mean, the purpose of prejudgment interest isn't to penalize people like my client. It's to compensate the other party for the loss of money. And it matters when the loss happened. And as I think came out in the exchange with Mr. Olson, I mean, the judgment here is for the location costs, the installation of the nodes on the new light posts. And, you know, it's not for stuff that happened between October 2021 and the date of the summary judgment motion argument in 2023. At that time, the new light posts weren't up. The nodes, whatever a node is, hadn't been relocated. The loss hadn't happened yet. So if there was a record made on this issue, if there was a motion properly made, I think it would have established, you know, with more specificity when the nodes would be relocated, and then there'd be a date at which the court could decide to pinpoint the post-judgment interest. But I mean, that didn't happen.
So I guess the injury occurred, you know, at the time, or was aware, the parties were aware of that at the time of the complaint was filed. So why is it, I mean, basically what I understand your argument to be is that they should have fronted the cost of relocation and then could get reimbursed for that, and maybe with had they done that, been able to have prejudgment interest, but instead they are waiting to, you know, to relocate them until they have the funds. So why is it that the party, assuming that that you're in the situation where the judgment's against your client, that they should bear the burden of fronting the cost of relocation without any kind of prejudgment interest?
Your Honor, I mean, if you look at the site plan, there's site plans. It shows where the new light posts are going to be, and in at least one of them, it says where the node is going to be relocated. So, I mean, there's no reimbursement to be made in 2021. You can only, the cost doesn't arise until the city puts up the new light post and Extinet pays whatever money it has to pay, or whoever pays whatever the money has to be to put the node up on the new light post. And none of that had happened yet at the time of the summary judgment motion argument. So, you know, even if we were talking about whether, you know, Sherman was supposed to pay for that directly or reimburse, which I think is what your question is, the loss event hadn't actually happened yet. So if Sherman was supposed to, you know, pay for it directly, it wouldn't have had to do that until the relocation actually happened, which, you know, wasn't in 2021 and wasn't even in 2023 in October. So I don't think that distinction matters, Your Honor. And also, I didn't hear Mr. Olson address why he didn't have to make a motion properly. So I think that by itself, the prejudgment interest issue was not properly before the court on that summary judgment motion. So subject to your questions, that is all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming today. I applaud the briefing that was done in this matter. Very well done. It was educational. The matter is submitted, and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame.